Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the Help on the Way podcast, where we are featuring September 29th, 1969, from the Cafe Agogo in New York, New York. Yeah. I am your co-host, Sir Game, here with my fellow co-hosts, Knob and Fig, and let's give them an old Cafe Agogo hello, friends.
Cafe Agogo hello,
friends. What is a Cafe Agogo hello to you, Game?
It's a nice little coffee with a pastry.
I'm seeing that.
It's a coffee and a pastry with go-go dancers in cages.
Wow.
Okay.
Made more sense about what Cafe Agogo is than I think I've ever heard in my entire life.
See that?
I think that's you just want
like
Cafe Agogo
every morning.
It's Cafe Agogo. Can we go there? Is that still a thing?
Let's look it up.
Is it like the Beatles?
No, where's the basement? Cafe Agogo's gone. It closed in December of 1970.
Ah, we just missed it, guys.
Damn it.
They were demolished in the 70s. So, they're gone.
It's a no.
Well, before we pivot more into Cafe Agogo talk, let's, of course, kick off with our famed Channel 6 news segment. And, of course, we only have two bulletins on said Channel 6 news segment this week. And the first one, 50 years ago, 1974, 50 years, The Grateful Dead released from the Mars Hotel. And to celebrate said release, Rhino is reissuing the record. And I believe it comes out on June 25th. A little bit of history from the Mars Hotel. It was originally released on June 27th, 1974. So this will be just, 6 days before its true 50th anniversary. The reissue will be coming out.
Yeah, it'll be the weekend.
And it contains some pretty good songs. U.S. Blues, Scarlet Begonias, and Ship of Fools, to name a few.
Hell yeah.
It Mars looks like...
Hotel has always one of my favorites of the studio albums. I like, with the exception of Money Money, there is no bad song on here, and every take of that song sounds solid on the album.
You know, I just had a thought for a spinoff podcast here, and it wouldn't include Knob, although Knob, you're certainly welcome to lifeguard.
Sure.
Game, are you like me where you just don't really know the studio albums?
I know, what studio albums do I know? I know
Shakedown Street.
I know American Beauty, really good.
Yeah, I think a Sub Pop might be you and I just listening to the studio albums and just talking about them.
I would probably come out gushing about how much I love said studio albums, and I would probably make everybody mad. I'd probably have like real strong. I'd be like, I don't know, like,
you'd be like U.S. Like, U.S. Go to Heaven, good, China Doll, really good, Unbroken Chain, great.
Go to Heaven beats Dead Set.
You insisting that Built to Last is a top 5 Grateful Dead album because it has 4 Brent songs on it.
Is it not? It's at least number 2, right?
getting back to Mars Hotel, those are some heavy hitters.
Yeah,
yeah,
really, and just going down, boom, 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 boom.
And yeah, it looks like
there's money. Pretty,
it looks like they're doing a pretty damn good job on the re-release too. So according to this article, of course Dave Lemieux is at the helm. 3 CDs, which I think is pretty cool for fucking 2024.
We're getting a live show too.
Are we? Oh yes, we are. We're getting demos of China Doll and Wave That Flag. And then a previously unreleased show, University of Nevada, Reno, May 12th, 74. A performance the band got through despite a windstorm. Interesting.
Uh-huh. It's a good show.
Interesting.
Looks good.
Another one is really good.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me that they always, whenever they're doing these re-releases, they try and pair them with shows of the era, but not shows full of the songs from the album. The only Mars Hotel song that's in this show is Ship of Fools.
So you probably...
Interestingly, though, the show came out before the album.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So maybe... that's an interesting thought, I think.
The 73 show that came with the Wake of the Flood 50th anniversary, the shows that came with the American Beauty and Working Man's Dead 50th anniversaries, they were similarly songs of the era, but not full of not songs themselves, from this album. It's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. I think only a band like the Grateful Dead could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't think... I don't know. I can't think of any other band that would just be like, you know, package up like, here's what we were doing at the time. And also, by the way, there's one song from the album that you have currently bought.
Yeah.
That we're featuring on it. That's really cool.
How did the Grateful Dead tackle touring and album releases? Like, we all know how it happens now. Like, you know, album released, artist goes out and does the album or does the big ones from the album and, you know, greatest hits and whatever. How did they tackle that back in the day? Like, that's, I never thought of that. Like,
a lot
they didn't
of
do your standard stuff, did they?
Yeah, it was less as we tend to do it. A lot of times it was just the Dead would tour around the time the album came out and just play very well. And there would be posters at the venue and stuff advertising that the Dead have a new album out. The one big exception that I know of is in 87, they do a show. It's right after In the Dark is released. And it's on the Dylan and the Dead tour. I think it's the first night of the Dylan and the Dead tour. And they play 6 out of the 7 songs off of In the Dark. And at the time, and the first 4 songs are, it's Touch of Grey, Hell in a Bucket, West LA Fadeaway, Tons of Steel, and then a couple other songs, then sprinkled throughout the night is Throwing Stones. And my dad was at that show and recalls people being very mad about the fact.
Like it's like an Arista Records set or something.
Yeah, exactly. Requested. And then they immediately follow Tons of Steel with Little Red Rooster, so...
I'll add that I've heard, and I agree with this to an extent, I've heard that the, you know, we all love Spring 77, but, you know, all of 77 can kind of be thought as, we have so many Terrapin Stations from 77 because that was the single at the time, and they were trying to sell Terrapin. So you can think of 77 as like, you know, the, hey, we're not just the Grateful Dead, we're also a rock and roll concern, and, you know, you can buy our new single, it's called, or our new album, sorry, it's a whole album, Terrapin Station, featuring the song Terrapin Station.
It was a good era for Dancing in the Street, it was a good era for Estimated Profit, and a lot. It was a combo of, these songs were new, and the Dead were still excited and interested in them, plus just the, you know, you scratch your back, you scratch mine.
Sure.
About it,
and it worked. I mean, clearly.
The new album.
Like,
yeah. Damn.
Our next Channel 6 topic is one that hits close to home. Nob, you got to spend some one-on-one time with one Betty Cantor Jackson that released just, I believe, 2 days ago now on the podcast feed and on YouTube, titled It's All About the Space, a special episode. Do you want to speak about your time with Betty and what takeaways you had from said interview?
Yeah, it was really cool.
Understatement.
That's the thing, is I kind of can't oversell it of anything related to being a fan of the Grateful Dead that I've got to do. And I've seen some cool shows, and someone once sent me a Chipotle gift card because I kept talking about how I was going to Chipotle before Dead & Co. shows. And someone once offered to blow me a piece of custom glassware. I had to finish that sentence as quickly as possible.
Yeah, that was...
So that it couldn't be cropped out of context.
I had my finger on the little buzzer, the sensor buzzer.
No, that's not something that I would mention on air. Off air, probably. But no, not on air. No, someone offered to do that, and then I lost their name in the sea of people. And I always...
You're not going
to
mention when Bob Weir played El Paso at the show that you're at
for that
you.
Was really cool. That would be up there for sure.
Hashtag confirmed. That
El Paso. Being in the room when Bob stepped out with J-Rad was pretty cool. Like, there's, you know, I've had some cool adventures, but nothing as cool as getting to talk to Betty Cantor Jackson about the music, about her experience with the music, about the way that she approaches sound and recording sound. She kept talking about how her art is capturing their art, and so much of her philosophy comes down to how do I best capture what they are trying to do. She talks a lot about the space and how she can tell her recordings from other people's recordings because of how they use the space. It was just really cool to pick her brain and to get some fun stories and tidbits and learn more about how Europe 72 got overdubbed vocally. And I don't know, there's a lot of cool information that I learned while doing it. And I just kept going like, wow, like I want to nerd out about this forever.
Nerd out about it. It was very informative.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I can speak for my co-host, Game. He did a phenomenal job. I can't speak for friend of the pod and one-time guest, your dad.
That's true.
Has your dad listened to it?
Yet. But I'll keep you all posted. Next week's Channel 6 will definitely include a dramatic reading of my dad's review of the Betty Cantor Jackson interview.
I need that in my life. And also for him to kind of dad you a little bit about it. Like, actually.
He'll have notes. Even if he likes it, he'll have notes.
Next time you talk to Betty Cantor Jackson.
Yeah. It's definitely it'll be a good time. Yeah, we'll have him back on the pod soon enough. Anyway, yeah, it was really cool, and I'm very grateful to Betty and her team for having her on the show, because that's if you told me when we started this podcast that I would within a couple of years be interviewing Betty Cantor Jackson, I'd be like, that's crazy. Also, if you told me 2 months ago that through doing this podcast we were going to be interviewing Betty Cantor Jackson, I would be like, no, that's not true. And I don't know. I've been like walking on air about it for the last like month. It's been really cool.
And a shout out to Reddit personality and one time guest of the show, Post Crasher and Hard.
Friend of the pod.
Mentor of the pod, perhaps.
Yes, if ever there was.
Patron of the pod.
No. Working in the background, helping the pod.
Yeah, that one's true.
Okay, fine. Don't censor me now.
Moving on to our main event of the evening is September 29th, 1969, from where? The Cafe Agogo in New York, New York. This is a really quick set. And in fact, I'm going to read over the set and then pass it over to Fig, who's going to not only review the set, but give us some information about the venue. The set that we are reviewing tonight only consists of Doing That Rag as the opener. Then we got, at least, I believe, the first ever and our first ever, The Seven. Good Lovin'. Yeah,
how many times was that played? Hold on, I'll get that.
Go ahead.
Oh, please be Seven. Please.
Oh, wait,
be
Jerry
seven.
Bass would have
that, right? Oh, it'd be so funny.
To Jerry
Bass. While you look that up, we also got Good Lovin', St. Stephen, and The 11. We got The Seven, and we got The 11.
Awesome.
Maybe that's why 7-Eleven got their... They played it five times.
Swing and a miss.
So, Fig, what were your thoughts on the show, and what are some information on said Cafe Agogo?
My thoughts right now are just crushed that they only played it five times. And this was the second to last. So Cafe Agogo, very famous Greenwich Village nightclub. So what the Dead were doing, they played some shows around this time at the Fillmore East, but then I guess they were also playing this nightclub. I mean, it would be awesome to see the Dead at the Fillmore East, but really cool to see them in the nightclub. And this show was very much a nightclub show. Like, it felt just, I don't know, like intimate, I think was a good way to put it. But the Cafe Go-Go, it was a Greenwich Village nightclub. You can't go visit it anymore. It was in the basement of Andy Warhol's theater. It was in Greenwich Village, like I said. And a lot of talent came through. I know it mostly from Jimi Hendrix fame. There's a Hendrix bootleg that came from Cafe Go-Go in 68. But its claim to fame is that it was the first New York City venue for the Grateful Dead. I think Knob is going to jump in there.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The Dead played in a park in New York like a week before. Cafe Agogo was the first venue in New York the Grateful Dead played that had a roof. It's probably the first place the Grateful Dead played that you could actually call a venue and not just a field in the middle of Manhattan. But yeah, it was the first time. This is not those shows the first time the Dead came over. This is about 2 years later. Those first shows were in 67.
Right. So they played in 10 times in 67.
Yeah.
And 3 times, including tonight in 69.
Yeah. Comedy nerds like me will know it as one of the venues that Lenny Bruce was arrested at in 1964 for obscenity because he said swear words in his stand-up comedy routine. Him and the
which is fascinating to me. Absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, that was the whole deal with Lenny Bruce, is that he just kept getting arrested for obscenity, and now everybody does. Everybody is trying to fill the shoes that Lenny Bruce cobbled.
Filthy mouthed comedians. What I didn't realize was that, so Lenny Bruce, there was a 6-month trial. It's like, how do you need 6 months to talk about whether he said it or not? But then while it was on appeal, Lenny Bruce died. And that's kind of crazy. He was free on bail during the appeal process. I don't know much about Lenny Bruce, but that's very interesting, an interesting tie-in with Cafe Go-Go.
So, a very interesting life.
Yeah, and a very interesting... maybe shortly lived, from February 64 to 1970, but very historic venue at Cafe Go-Go. So the Grateful Dead played there. We have kind of a snippet of a show. It's the taping starts with Doing That Rag, but they actually played... I saw a list where they actually played another song before
that. He was a friend of mine.
He was a friend of mine.
Listed.
Yeah. So interestingly, someone on the archive had a really good show, really good comment about the show where they're just like, you know, they're just having fun. Everything was just light. There was no dark star, you know, spaciness. There was no, Now He's Dead and Gone. I forgot the song title, but right now, but like none of like the dreariness of the Grateful Dead. And then the first song that they actually did play that night was He Was a Friend of Mine. But the snippet that we have, it was lovely and fun and just, I mean, just, I don't know, like a cannonball of a show. So we start off with Doing That Rag. And the first thought I had was, wait, this is September 69. The Grateful Dead were in New York, famously a San Francisco concern. They were in New York on middle of August for Woodstock. What were they doing back in New York City at September? And that's exactly what they did. They went home, they played a couple shows, and they went right back to New York City. And they were there for sometime at the end of September and into October. So Doing That Rag, I wrote pretty proggy and composed and pretty well played. There's a lack of separation in the recording itself that made it hard to follow the individual instruments, but it did sound pretty tight with Bobby doing so much. The jam sounds like the best garage band that you could imagine out there. They jam into the 7. I wrote that this was a fun sketch of his jam. It captures the tilt-a-whirl essence of the 11 very well. Lots of fun. Jerry gets this lick going. Not sure it's the main jam lick, but he did get everybody to follow him along just for a little bit, which was kind of cool. And at the very end, there's this complicated merry-go-round sounding lick with a key change that the crowd really seemed to enjoy. And it was pretty impressive that they were just pretty much pulling the song out of their ass, is my take of the 7. And I imagine that they were just playing in 7 rather than 11.
Yes.
Yeah. So, again, and I have thoughts about that when we get to the 11, because they do play the 11. Right? Oh, no. Did they play the... They did.
7 and the 11.
Well, why don't I have notes on the 11? I just have St. Stephen. Where'd my notes on the 11 go?
Uh-oh. My only note on the 11 is that I really liked it.
Okay, so let me continue. So, okay, when does the 11 come?
After St. Stephen.
After St. Stephen. Okay, hold on. Let me look at my phone, because something, something didn't upload or something.
Okay.
Pausing for time.
Vamp.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. All right. I got confused because William Tell, the William Tell portion of St. Stephen went right into the 11th. So
yes,
that's what happened. Okay, great. So, and that's the other cool thing was that these were all organic jams. It was very well planned and thought out how the songs were going to blend into each other. And they did it very well. So they blend into Good Loving, which was really fast. Really, the whole thing just kind of like sounded like a pre-workout for drums. And drums really was a workout. The Rhythm Devils were all over the place. Really good offering by them. Back into Good Loving, which was impressive to me that they actually maintained the tempo throughout the whole drum section. And granted, the crowd was absolutely eating this up. And we get into St. Stephen, which I thought was cool because the crowd actually knew the song just from the intro lick. So a lot of Grateful Dead fans in New York City, obviously. I don't know if anybody else noticed this. Who's playing organ tonight? Is it Pig?
Yeah.
I think it's Pig
with Constantin on keys.
Okay, so there is an organ lick or organ line right before Lady Fingers. That movement, and Pig just really accentuates every possible note on his, you know, every descending note in that line all the way to the Lady Fingers movement. I thought it was kind of funny and trolly. I noticed someone was playing xylophone. I don't. That must have been something there because I'm sure the Grateful Dead are not touring with a xylophone.
Put that past Mickey Hart.
Yeah, that's true. At this time, I'm not sure what the hell they're doing. But
yeah,
the tape gets really full and saturated in the jam here, and it sounded lovely. So the tape was muddy, but sometimes when you have a lot of data going into old school tape, it really gets saturated and warm and it feels great. This one actually had a great feel to it. I was listening on headphones and it just really just gave me a little brain tickle. Really cool stuff. Bobby was really chugging along at the end of St. Stephen here, and William Tell portion was well done. And the 11, all I have is that the main tilt-a-whirl of a song is less of a song and more of just math that works as a song. And I don't need to elaborate on that. But if you guys would like to, I can talk about it. That's my only take on the 11.
Interesting. Yeah, it's just math. Well, it's interesting because it's just a standard 12-8 shuffle, just taking that last eighth off.
Like a truncated 12-8 or something.
Yeah, it like very much is playing with 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-1-2-3, and it just... is supposed to slightly unsettle you every time, keeping it just off kilter. It's definitely more of a jam than a song. It is definitely...
It's a concept more than a song, yeah.
Yeah, that main idea thrown around with lyrics over it at one point. I think similarly, because I was listening to Playing in the Band earlier, and that one is often, to me, just an experiment of how many different ways Bob can play with 10-4. Because the main riff... puts the 10-4 in one way, but then the also treats it differently. The verses and the chorus have a slightly different relationship. It's all very interesting, but that one is a little more of a song to me than the 11.
Oh, absolutely. Nav, go ahead.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's a good show. The only real gripe to have is that the tape sounds bad. Like, it's the best we have. It's it's the nicest sounding aud available because it's the only thing available. But I was saying a game in the pre-show that I think if this had a clean soundboard, this is a show that people would say, this is a killer, underrated 69 show that you've never heard. This is going to blow your mind. Because it's really good. The energy is just there. Yeah. Like you were saying, it's got that nightclub feel to it. You don't get as much spaciness, but that's not what they're going for tonight. And there is a looseness to it, but it's always in the service of energy. And that, to me, the tone is set with the opening doing that rag, because that's a song that normally lives in that dreamier kind of world. But this immediately starts playing with intensity, and it's cool, and it really works. We then get into the 7, which is fun. I, again, a little more of a concept than a proper song. Do mm-hmm. we, to play a little guessing game, do we know the other two big Grateful Dead songs that are in Seven?
No.
One is a favorite of us here on the show.
Should we solicit fans? Maybe fans can... little trivia? Little knobs trivia?
No. It's not... No. Fans, pause and leave a comment in the most recent Reddit thread right now about what you think are the two...
I don't understand how time works with this podcast. Songs in
7-8. Yeah, we'll see it on the thread about the Red Rock show.
Don't get me started about time zones. That's beyond me.
Oh, yes. And I know this about you. Okay, so now that we've given you enough time, we're back. Hello. I hope you enjoyed your pause. The two Grateful Dead songs, the big ones that are in 7 are Estimated Profit and also Lazy Lightning Into Supplication. Also that middle part of Uncle John's Band that kind of sounds like Supplication.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
I guess that's what the 7 is. Yeah. I guess that kind of is what the 7 is. It reminds me of an early version of Supplication, but as I say this out loud, it's probably just a trial run of the jam in Uncle John's Band. Anyway, it's got great energy. It's a really good 7. It never strays too far from its home base, but I love the energy in the journey it goes on. Good Lovin' is solid. My only complaint is that it's 20 minutes too short. There's some raucous drums in the middle. It's like everything tonight. It's really high energy. It's not the most out there or exploratory rendition, but that's not what it's going for. And then we get to St. Stephen. It's a slower St. Stephen, but it's still able to nail all the dynamic turns on a dime that this song succeeds with. It's got, again, not to keep harping on the same theme, but it's all about the energy tonight, and it's got a really good energy. And then the 11 is really good. It's just a solid rendition. And then presumably there is more that happens after this, but the tape cuts off. But overall, it's a really fun experience.
Yeah, and they played a second set that is lost to history.
And I'd be willing to bet that there's at least a song after the 11, a Love Light or something of the sort. Maybe a
Death the tape does. You can hear the tape.
We could only speculate. Well, I'm going to say that it's actually
there's a hard stop
really...
at in the 11, so
yeah.
you can tell the tape runs out. Yep.
Yeah, and I'm going to speculate and say that they were actually, after this, playing a really early version of Victim or the Crime. and we have no way to prove or disprove this theory. So, anyway, those are my thoughts. Game, what did you think?
I want to believe.
The muddiness of this tape really took me out of it. You could hear that there was some goodness in there. But yeah. I just couldn't get over the muddiness. Doing that rag was probably the biggest offender for me.
Yeah.
As soon as that started, I was like,
there was zero separation in doing that rag. Yeah.
Yeah.
Couldn't hear the vocals. Yeah.
No, like at all. The 7 was fun. It's kind of really all I have to say about it.
I was wondering if that would speak to you as a Lazy Lightning Supplication fan.
Yeah. It was, I didn't turn it off.
Did you turn off drums?
I did. I did skip drums,
dude.
Good Lovin'. I really
literally
enjoyed.
Good Lovin' drums. Good Lovin'. Like, how long could that have been?
I didn't want to find out. Good Lovin'. I really enjoyed. Saint Stephen. I really enjoyed. And I thought the 11 was good. This is probably the most I've enjoyed a Primal Dead show without really still liking it due to the audio quality.
That's really the thing that keeps coming back to me is if this was a nicer sounding tape, I would tell all of my friends that are like even vaguely into Primal Dead that you got to listen to this.
Yeah.
But it's such a, you just have to take it for what it is.
Well,
and trust,
let me ask you
a
question.
Music underneath is worth it.
So it's not unheard of for me to skip some of these odds, ancient shows that have, you know, odds that some guy just set up and, you know, we're glad to have them, but they're barely audible. Was this a good call to keep this one tonight? Yes. I mean, I'm not asking for like a pat on the back, but okay. Yeah.
No, this is worth it. That's the thing. Yeah. It's worth listening to the less than stellar quality, right, to put it incredibly kindly, to hear how strong, how sharp the band is playing tonight.
And to capture whatever they captured, like the essence of that night.
It's as much as we have of this night, and that is magical, and for that I am grateful. If this tape sounded better, I would be sending this to everyone I know. And that's kind of my final... That's what, like, I keep coming back to, is that the playing is so good, and then the tape sounds like that.
Yeah, and it was a fun night, you know, to that commenter's statement. Like they did capture it very well. Like, they just were on a gear that was really fun and great jamming. I mean, they just sound like they're having a ball.
It was. It was a blast.
Yeah.
So, we do not have a Scarlet Fire to rate this week, obviously. However, and I'll just make this a general question.
They could have played a Scarlet Fire after the 11.
We don't know it.
We can't be sure.
Does this show make anyone's Book of the Dead?
I'm going with
That would be a no.
Okay.
No, it's a no. And again, it's just about the quality of the tape.
The which set question is incredibly easy to answer tonight.
Do we want to truncate this at all? Like, do we want to take out doing that rag? Like,
no, I think you gotta. It's 45 minutes.
All right. Mother Trucker, because that might actually be an interesting.
I'm going to listen to what you two say first before I give my opinion.
Because it's cheap.
Fig.
You didn't have to start. I think it was Bobby. He was very in front of the mix, and you could see what he was doing, and you know that right wrist got some crazy workout that night. He was doing quite a lot, and a lot of interesting rhythmic patterns. I really liked what he was doing, and so did the taper, because you heard a lot of him.
Nob, your Mother Trucker.
It's probably Jerry. It's a great night for Bobby. I will definitely say that that's a fair shout. No arguments from me, but it was a great Jerry night.
Do I like Good Lovin' more, or do I like Saint Stephen more?
Well, you did skip the middle 6 minutes of Good Lovin'.
Yeah, but I was singing it in my mind when I skipped it. You know what? I'm going to go Bobby. I think I really, really like the Good Lovin' a little bit more than Saint Stephen. Though Saint Stephen was still excellent. Saint Stephen was still excellent, but Bobby's muddy vocals on Good Lovin' pushed it through.
But Pigpen sings Good Lovin' at this point.
Was it Pig?
That's true. Yeah.
Bobby doesn't start singing Good Lovin' until 74.
All right. Hey, Pigpen. All right.
Pig boy.
It was so muddy, I fucking thought it was Bobby. Maybe they probably did a fucking Love Light, and it was probably excellent, and we'll never get to hear it, and I'll never get to be like, I like that one Love Light, that one. Nope.
It was 75 minutes long, and in the middle, he actually read up there. All of the words of what would eventually be Terrapin Station.
Can the show title be The Adventures of Pig Boy?
Adventures of Pig Boy. I love it.
We have one Reddit comment this week from Ganja Love. I believe that's what that is. Ganja Love. I also love the Ganj. Both of those Cafe Agogo shows rip. Yeah. Amazing. Too bad they couldn't have played like that at Woodstock. Yo, facts. Just ripping away. Next up, what do we got? We got July 27th, 1982, Red Rocks, Colorado. We all know what that is. A quick scan of the set list reveals to me... All right, I was going to say nothing exceptional, but I see it must have been the Roses, and I do love that one. When's the last time we got on the road again?
A long time.
Yeah,
good I'm excited for that one.
And it's electric on the road again.
Yeah. Other than that, though, it kind of just looks like a typical show.
Yeah. But, you know, that's what we're known for. That's what they're known for.
Playing terrapin, drums, wheel.
Never miss a Tuesday show.
Ever miss a Tuesday show. As always, let's go ahead and wrap this up so our old asses can go to bed. As always, please go ahead and like and subscribe and share with any and all of your Grateful Dead loving friends and family, and even the ones that don't, fuck it, give it to them all. Of course, you may find us at wherever podcasts are downloaded. However, if there is a service that happens to rhyme with One More Saturday, not a fi, you will not find us on that one. However, you will find us on any other major podcast platform. Of course, if you'd like to get your podcast the old-fashioned way, you may do so at helpontheway.podbean.com. If you would like to send us an electronic mail like Tom Hanks did to Meg Ryan back in the day, you may do so at helpontheway.pod@gmail.com. Of course, we are on Reddit at reddit.com/r/GratefulDead, and we are not joining their IPO. You may also look at us on YouTube at youtube.com/@HelpOnTheWayPod, and my Kick channel, which I'm probably going to fire up for the hell of it over Easter weekend, is kick.com/theGDChannel. Any final words from my friends, Knob or Fig?
If you got both of the Grateful Dead songs that are in 7, I'm really personally proud of you.
Aww. And Knob, I'm really personally proud of you for the interview with Betty. That was really cool.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm personally proud of you for being a cool guy.
Aww.
And on this Love Fest note, we're going to wrap it up and bid you adieu. And thank you once again for listening to the Help on the Way podcast. Thank you.
Thank you.